Così che considera l'intellectual investment for a group of people like you to ask me to stand here and talk about the precision of a part that has not been discovered yet, that a machine that has not been approved yet. However, as you have seen from what Jim Brown has shown, there is an intense activity to get the machine approved. And well, we all know that there is, and especially there will be, an intense activity to get the Higgs boson discovered. So if both things are going to happen, then definitely this will become your day-by-day business or nightmare or challenge, because well, the combination of the cross-section and luminosity that we do expect such a machine will definitely push the data sets that will be available of Higgs boson production and decays into a regime in which high accuracy will be necessary. I mean, this plot here shows you, well, let's start from here. This shows you which kind of integrated luminosity you need to get 10 to the 5 Higgs bosons produced if the Higgs boson is 120, 180, 240 GeV on an energy range that goes from the threshold up to 3 TeV. So you see that it doesn't take, I mean, typically the kind of samples that one can consider taking into account the luminosity of the project and the nice way that the luminosity scale up with energy are of the order of one octobarn or in excess of that. So you see that it won't take long before one can actually get samples that are in excess to 10 to the 5 Higgs bosons. So once you do that, I mean, there will be also the properties of the E plus E minus collision will allow you to assess the properties of the Higgs boson decays and of its production and decay in a variety of ways. And I've tried to go a bit apart from my usual Higgs profile talk by going more in some details on lines where there has been some recent developments, even though some of the plots actually are quite old, but I mean some of the results have been updated. You know, one of the first places where you definitely try to get accuracy is a measurement of the couplings of the Higgs to quarks. This is because it will give you definitely a proof of the generation of the mass for the fact that these couplings should scale, or the ratio of these couplings should scale exactly as the ratio of the masses. This can be done at a rather low energy collider, and say, I mean, even below 500 GeV if the Higgs boson is light. And this is a kind of scenario that is most interesting because the Higgs boson is rather light. You have more of the quarks produced, and essentially you can access the couplings to the B, to the charm, and then you also access the coupling essentially of the top through that on the gluon and through the Yukawa TTH production. And the idea that essentially what you want to do is to have a detector that it allows you to separate well charm from B, and all what has no lifetime components is most likely light that is essentially will be here saturated by the gluon component, plus as a background that will come from the WW. And then you can make global fits to this, and this is a kind of accuracy that you'll get on the branching ratio being varied according to the detail of the simulation of the assumption of the performance of the detector. And anyway, I mean, those on the decays and the coupling to Bs are, I mean, in terms of branching ratios, in the ballpark of essentially 1%, and what is given here is essentially dominated by the accuracy with which you measure the production itself of the Higgs boson through the extralum mechanism. The coupling to the charm and to the gluons, I mean, there are a number of different values that come up. I'm responsible for those that are most optimistic, and people that have been going in further details on the simulation of the final states tend to be somehow less optimistic. However, I mean, here there are a lot of assumptions about the reconstruction, a lot of assumptions about the detector performance. So it's exactly the frontier where you have to do your study and define what are the needed detector performances and improve your analysis techniques in order to be able, anyway, to achieve accuracy on the couplings of the X that are in the ballpark of a few percent. The usual question that one gets when one shows this kind of accuracy is, this is all very nice, but this is only if the X boson is 120 GV. If the X boson is heavier, probably our perspective are a bit duller, because not because a linear collider is less rich, but because the X boson profile is less rich itself, so there will be less to discover. So there has been some significant activity that has been invested into that. Essentially, the idea is that there you can still study at 500 GV the recoil to the Z, and you can extract the mass of the X and its width and the cross-section from a fit to the recoil mass. And you can do that, I mean, to rather good accuracy, and this is a kind of study that has been performed by in the context of the ECFA European study, where you see here for a 240 GV X, you are able by looking to the WW and ZZ final states, I mean, with completely negligible background, to get not only the mass but also the natural width or the X out of a fit. So this is a kind of accuracy that you can get for X masses that are rather large. Here is a case of 240 GV, you have again accuracy on the mass that are comparable to what you have at a lower mass. You are start being sensitive to the width by direct fit, not only by summing on the individual decays. And you are measuring the branching ratio to the gauge boson, so to something that is of the order of 10% or better, and you measure the cross-section, the extra long, to about 4%. However, the one problem that you have is that here you are essentially addressing the issue of the coupling of the X to the gauge sector, and the fermions are somehow elusive in this case. They get elusive because the branching ratio of the X to BB bar, that is shown here for 120 GV, almost saturates the decays. When you go about 200, I mean, you start getting in the realm of rare decays because it's a few per mil. And then we go even higher, I mean, it goes essentially to the per mil. So the X to BB bar, that is the main mode that is to be looked for a light X here, become a rare decay mode, and the decays otherwise are completely saturated by ZZ and WW. However, there are ways that you can get information there as a linear collider. Essentially, the idea is that you want to emphasize the WW fusion process over the extralum process, not only because, at larger center of mass energy you gain in cross-section, but you also gain in signal-to-background ratio. This is shown from this plot that are done as a compact level, where what I plot here is a BB bar mass. This is a background that you have essentially from BB nu, including BB nu, you see here the cross-section of the signal. So if you are looking to the extra long, for a rather light Higgs boson, you have a very good signal-to-noise ratio. When you get to the level 200 or above, your signal-to-noise ratio becomes such that you cannot make any decent measurements, and also your statistics become very small. However, if you go to larger energies, this was 800 GV because it was fine-tuned on the Tesla upper energy, but I mean, it can be easily extended to 1 TV, and the next transparency shows that, and you are looking to the WW fusion, you see that not only your background is low, but your cross-section is also larger, so you are essentially profiting of a larger signal-to-background ratio all the way. What you are giving away, and you always have to give away something, here you are essentially giving away the constraint coming from the Z, so you cannot do any more recoil technique, but you have essentially to look to final states in which you explicitly tag the Bs, and this will recoil against the missing energy. So it also says that when you do that, you also want to be sure that you are, here you are essentially constrained on the Z boson, there is little else background that can be there. Here you want to be sure that when you are going to the four fermion or more final states, I mean, you are not getting surprises from the background. So background calculation starts being very important in this case. So if you are at 800 GV with unpolarized beams, these are the kind of signals you can get out using one octobarn of data at 180 GV and 220. You see that it starts being marginal at 220, but you can still get out a signal that is significant over the background. And it's significant in this case to something of the order of 4 sigma. you can measure the branching ratio to accuracies that essentially allow you to get the couplings in the ballpark of better than 10%. That is something that, anyway, is remarkable for such heavy Higgs bosons. You can do even better if you go to 1 TV and you take polarized beam. I mean, this analysis is in a completely different, on a completely different league compared to the previous one. This has been done including fast simulation, but parameterized simulation, but all backgrounds. I mean, Tim Barclow has done a very interesting job going through that. And here includes all the 2 to 8 fermion backgrounds that have been generated with Wizard. And he uses polarized beams, with polarized beam 80% polarization for the electron and 50% for the positrons. You see that at the end, due to the enhancement in the production cross-section WW fusion due to the polarization, you are dealing with almost 600K of 120 GVXs, and okay, less of for the heavier, but you have a very significant data set. You have more than 500,000 of Xs in your data set. So rare decay modes become measurable for larger masses. It goes down, but it still remains sizable in the order of several hundred Ks. And this allowed, so this is kind of signal you get for 120 and you get significant signals also for larger masses. This allows the team to come up with these accuracies on the branching ratios, where you see that if you are able to run at high center of mass energy and with polarized beam and with fixed polarization, essentially you can keep your accuracy on the BV bar branching ratio stable for quite a significant range, and anyway, in the ballpark of 5%, even for a 200 GV Higgs boson, you can get a gluon with quite good accuracy, and the WW coupling remains in the ballpark of 1% for the whole range that has been explored up and above 200 GV. Of course, the one price that you have to pay is that you must be in a scenario in which there is nothing else as a Higgs boson present, or in your collaboration there is only the Higgs working group, because this kind of polarization essentially is detrimental to other analysis that you like to do. But if you are in a scenario in which the Higgs boson is somehow heavy and you have no significant signal of supersymmetry as you would expect if you have a Higgs of 200 GV or above, then you can take a bold choice and to run in this configuration, and you get you do precision Higgs physics even in this case, and this is an important complement to what the LHC will be able to provide you, essentially only looking to the Z and some of the part of the W. You can get eventually to even larger energies, so this is more futuristic, but the click concept should allow you energy up to 5 TV, with 3 TV is kind of optimal. And if you run here with unpolarized beams, so we only be futuristic on the energy, and eventually one can also imagine to put polarization in, you see that the signal that before were a bit marginal, the 220 GVX now are sticking quite significantly above the background, and you see that you can get essentially accuracy of your BV bar branching ratio that allow you coupling measurements to the order of few percent all over the range up to 220, maybe slightly above that. Once more, now you are in a regime in which this background has such large energy also needs to be controlled quite accurately. So this is also a general call that this kind of accuracy will definitely need to be confronted with an accurate estimation, not only of the of the amount of the background, but of the shapes of the background in the important discriminating variables. The linear collider does not only allow you to study the generation of the mass in the Coulomb sector, but you can do the electron sector separately. And not only you can do the tau versus the B, for example, but you should be able to do separately for lepton of second and third generation. In fact, the branching ratio X into tau can be measured quite easily due to the very peculiar final state that you are looking, especially in the associated production with the Z that gives you the constraint on the X mass in the 350 to 500 GV. And you can also observe the X into mu as a rare decay at one TV you get some signal that already tells you there's a coupling is there, because you do see Higgs boson going into muons, into muon pairs, and if you can afford to go to the multi-TV regime, essentially there you can do then precision studies of these couplings, because you see that your uncertainty here is on the coupling, not on the branching ratio as it was before. So it's already, the factor two has already been factored in. You see that this kind of accuracy are now in the order of from few percent to about 10%, while anyway, also the lower energy, you get some information, at least the coupling is detected. Once you have that, you can study then the ratio of mu to tau coupling, so you make a check of mass generation in the lepton sector, and you can do it with an accuracy that is somehow comparable, let's say not a more than a factor two worse than what you would be doing in a muon collider producing directly the X on its pole. You see X mass is between 120 and 140. If the X is somehow heavier, you may have some gain here because you'll be, your sensitivity will be dying away slower than is the case of the pole production as a muon collider. I mean, all these accuracy that are in the ballpark of few percent also call what's the kind of accuracy that you have when you're predicting your branching ratio. And one main uncertainty that we have been dealing up to now is the one coming from the quark masses. I use to produce a plot in which I was, it's not here. The first time I give a X talk, I don't show the famous plot where there are the different bands with the errors that are theoretical error, and I show that our experimental error are smaller. However, also the bands of the theoretical error can be made smaller because the quark masses are starting being known to better accuracy. This coming from something that is completely different field, but it's nice to have some synergy here. And essentially, the determination of the heavy quark massing using moments of spectral distributions in lepton EBD decays that are owing a lot to the large data sets that are available as a B factories, and also to the ingenuity of the CDF physics colleagues that are essentially pushing the uncertainty on the masses, where the masses that are given here are kinetic masses of 1 GeV and 1 S, and then to transform to what you are using for computing your branching ratios of the X. However, you see that there are significant improvements that are coming in, and then when you try to translate them as a kind of improvement on the X branching ratio theoretical accuracy, you see that you are essentially going down and you are potentially bringing the accuracy from the theoretical prediction down to the level of the accuracy that you have from your experiment. And this is this kind of feat that you can perform. Here I show the difference between the B and the C mass plot as a function of the B mass, and this is obtained from moments in the hadronic mass distribution and the lepton energy in semi-leptonic decays, and you have enough information that you can start squeezing in on the value of the mass and the mass difference or MC versus MB. And these feats not only account for the masses that are shown here, but there are also the 1/MB³ correction parameter that are fitted independently as they account for some of these uncertainties that are shown. This was actually done even not with a B factor, but this was something I did some time ago with a Delphi data set. So imagine, how much better with 100 million Bs this can come, and there is a paper from Baba that is coming out right now, and there will be more that will be done by the time the linear collider will be seeing more than 100k X's. The reconstruction of the X potential is one vexata question between myself and the chairman, so I'll be very brief on that. A constant claim is that there is an advantage to that at the linear collider, and the constant remark in the discussion session is that an hadron collider can do also pretty well. So let me talk about the part of the linear collider here. So the idea here is that you have again access to the X potential through the both the the triple Higgs coupling is associated production of two Higgs bosons with a Z boson, and this is again something that is more favorable to a lower center of mass energy. Essentially what you see here is a cross section for this process as a function of the relative deviation with respect to the standard model, and you see that not only the cross section is larger to rather low energy, it's fine-tuned on the mass of the Higgs that you have discovered, but also the slope here is higher, and therefore you have higher accuracy. When you go to heavier Higgs bosons, or you have larger center of mass energies available, you can significantly gain by going and looking to the HH nu production. You note here that this scale has, this is 0.15 femtobarn, and this is 1 femtobarn, so you gain a factor of 5 or more in the cross section. You're losing something on the slope, but overall, I mean, and you have also gain because you can go to larger masses in terms of sensitivity. Once you have measured the triple Higgs coupling, you can compare that with a mass that you have measured with high accuracy, and this is a definite test of the Higgs potential. This is a scaling of this different center of mass energies for different masses in a range of 120, 280, or 200 GeV. And here you see that they have essentially two competing effects. One is that with larger center of mass energies that are ranging from 1 up to 5 TeV, you have increased in the cross section. But at the same time, your sensitivity in terms of the change in the cross section for a given change in the coupling goes down, because you have more diagrams that are contributing to this cross section that don't have anything to do with the triple Higgs coupling, so you have a dilution effect. So essentially, when you put these two things together, you get that you have somehow an optimal point, but the optimization means very flat, and when include the kind of reconstruction efficiency that we envisage for this kind of decay, you have something that gives you, for 120 GeV, well, a kind of accuracy of the order of 10%, or slightly better. You can principle improve that by a factor of 2 if you are able to run with polarized beams all the time, and then you have a factor of 4 in the cross section and a factor of 2 on this kind of accuracy. Again, if the only thing that you are interested in this case is a X sector, you can do that happily, and you get essentially the kind of accuracy that I've shown you before for the branching ratio, and you get this improvement, essentially improvement of factor of 2 here on the triple X coupling. If there is other physics you are caring of, probably your colleagues that are in other working groups will be screaming that they want to have different polarization, and then overall, then probably you'll be running a different polarization at different times, so taking the unpolarized option is a kind of good average for the kind of statistic that you'll be having. So with this accuracy, you want to tell the standard model X from SUSY Higgs. And I mean, one can do that with kind of reach that is up to about 600 GeV in MA. But it's even more interestingly from the kind of from the kind of accuracy on the branching ratio, the coupling of the X that you'll be getting, you can also give some hint of what MA is. And so this is a function of MA, which is the error of MA. And I mean, this is of quite some interest, because it may allow you to tune the next phase of the machine at energy in which the HA production, means the heavy X production, will be available. When I started doing that kind of exercise, usually Marcella was coming up screaming that this is not completely correct, because maybe if you're SUSY, you don't only have those corrections that give you the sensitivity on MA, but you have a number of other things. And among the number of other things, you have this bottom gluon and this bottom Higgsino loops, and they give you a number of funny behaviors, especially the low value of MA, that come, as you well know, I mean, from a shift of effective coupling with respect to the big quark mass. So these go essentially as in proportional to tangent beta. However, as an experimentalist, one is inventive enough that one turns what was a problem into what is an advantage. And if this really happens, you have such rapid variations of your branching ratios that whatever measurement you are doing then is constraining very accurately your parameters. This is a kind of change that you expect from the branching ratio in BB or in mu mu on the two different scales as function of MA, and this is a scan that I did once with Michael Spira on one of the preliminary releases of HDK 3 as a tangent beta as a function of MA. I mean, these are contours how much as a branching ratio of the x into mu mu will change with respect to that in the standard model. And so one has a way to pin down these parameters independently coming from these effects. However, having, I mean, more of this being brought forward to us is very useful because we can see, I mean, essentially, one of the problems when one studies the accuracy is usually, is this accuracy interesting? Is this accurate enough? And so which is the kind of ballpark of the deviation that we do expect that can actually be tested. Here is exactly one case where this is maybe not so interesting what can be done. If you want to do the same study that I've shown for the standard model X, in the case of the SUSY X for the self-couplings. Here the problem is that while the function of MA, the effect of the changes of the triple X coupling for the small h are significant, for the other, I mean, the effect are rather small. So here is a kind of sensitivity that you have to the triple X coupling of the small h that is essentially what is done also for the standard model X. And you see that if you are going and looking to the triple X coupling of the heavy X's to the light X, the region of parameter where you can really have some sensitivity is rather limited. And this sensitivity usually comes with large uncertainty. So once more, which is the ballpark of accuracy that one needs in doing self-coupling of the SUSY X to be interesting, to be either compared with some prediction or to be able to discriminate between different scenarios. I don't show you generally what one can do with the EV, on the EV X sector because it's quite well known that you can see these peaks and you can measure the mass. I would like to bring more your attention to the connection with cosmology in this field because this takes some while, yeah. Because the WMAP data is essentially forcing us to rethink where SUSY may be realized if the LSP is indeed responsible and possibly the only responsible for the dark matter that has been observed. Essentially, in the presence of the LEP2 limits that are pushing somehow away from the bulk region where the LSP will be naturally a candidate, one has to find mechanisms that are reducing the density if the LSP has a mass that is larger than what will be down here in the bulk region. So one of these mechanisms that is relevant for the X physics as a linear collider is that in which the neutralino density is reduced through what is called the rapid annihilation that goes through the A-pole that is essentially active at large tangent beta. And this is, offers a solution that it essentially reconciles a rather heavy neutralino with the satellite data. This is only active when the mass of the A is close to twice the mass of the neutralino, but not quite close. You see, this plot shows you with the omega h square as a function of the ratio of the neutralino mass to the A mass. And this is where the satellite data sits, and I apologize, this is plot yesterday night, I should have used a logarithmic scale. And you see that when this is exactly half, the process is even too effective, and you are getting too low density. However, as you just move a bit away, you have regions where the masses are almost one twice the other, and you can remove enough of the density that makes your data compatible with WMAP. So, and essentially you are then probing this region here. It is quite interesting because the mainly favored regions, they run exactly along the forbidden region, the up because there is no electrosymmetry breaking, and down here because the LSP will be charged, will be the tau. I have to stop, yes. I do two transparency, three transparency, no, sums. Next is a coffee break, no? Yeah. That's why. I can bring in coffee. So this is a kind of a region shown in three dimensions. This is again M0 and M1 alpha, and this tangent beta. And you see that these regions are kind of narrow. I show you here what's the corresponding term of MA as a function of tangent beta on the famous LAC region. This things are essentially the sit up here. You have MA that runs from something that was 300 GV all the way up, with tangent beta is in the ballpark of 40 to 50. So you have a rather narrow region of parameters. In this region of parameter, you expect to have about 2,000 events per Atobarn if you are significantly above threshold. You can measure your Higgs boson to a few MeV. You measure your production cross-section time branching ratio to something like 5%. And interestingly enough, you can actually measure the decay of the A into neutralinos that will essentially be the reverse process of the one that you want to test that has happened in the early universe that has removed this excess of neutralinos. And you can also study the branching fraction in BB bar and tau tau, essentially by using the associated production. And this is a kind of signal that you'll be extracting up there. Well, the extra dimension goes in the extra time, so this is okay. Well, there's only two slides. I mean, the kind of accuracy to use a linear collider also would allow you to test a number of possible of these fancy scenarios. These fancy scenarios are already brought in to see if the X is not seen as LAC, should we get desperate? No, should be happy, because it means that there is new physics, is extra dimension, and the X is somehow hidden from the few well-known modes that the LAC can study with good accuracy. So one of these is X radian mixing. Essentially, here you get the mixing of the X with the radian gravity scale in the Randall-Sundrum model, and this shifts the coupling of the X essentially to gamma-gamma and makes the X to become essentially invisible as the LAC. However, with a kind of, this is a kind of complicated plot that nobody understands, also not myself, that I did some time ago. However, these are the blue regions here is where the X would become invisible as LAC. The regions that are shown here in blue is where the LAC will recover some sensitivity because you see the radian inside of the X, but the region that is shown in red inside these two parts that covers completely the plane is where the linear collider will have anyway sensitivity, so there is some good matching. And the last one is a possibility in the ADD model that you have this time again mixing with a gravity scala that gives you a significant invisible width for the X boson. Once more, the LAC won't see the X in gamma-gamma or in BB bar just because it's not there, would probably be able to detect it invisibly if forward jet tagging works. But the kind of accuracy that the linear collider will have, that is shown in this plot, that is down here at just a few percent in accuracy, will allow you not only to detect that actually there is a significant invisible decay mode, but also to pin down some of the parameters. So you add essentially extra information beyond just the observation. So, and here I want to stop. Thanks.
Urgent questions for Marco.
What is the coffee?
Yeah. No urgent questions. Wonderful. So let's go and have coffee. Let's come back at 5 after 11. Let's thank Marco again.